Welcome to That Be Mindset, where we use the power of language and storytelling to help you find your voice. Today's episode is episode number 32, and today's episode title is The Little Things with Barbara Louise Brennan. So Barbara is a speaker, a facilitator, and a coach around mental health and well-being. She helps people to understand the importance of taking care of our mental health, the impact that stigma has, and how to live the most amazing life possible. She has almost a decade of experience raising awareness around mental health and the possibility that full recovery is possible for people. She has spoken at many companies throughout Ireland and the UK, including Ibec, Coca-Cola, and Boots. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the impact of stigma, how to normalize the conversation when it comes to talking about our mental health, how to take personal responsibility for our lives, and how the struggle element of mental health issues is optional. So if you enjoyed today's episode, I'd appreciate it if you could leave a rating and a review wherever you're listening to it too. And I hope you enjoyed today's episode. So I'll just start off with the first question. So what do you do today, Barbara, and what is the mission and purpose behind what you do?
Well, I suppose there's a number of different things that I do. So I do a lot of public speaking and I do some workshops, and they're all around mental health and mental health awareness, stigma reduction, wellness and personal responsibility and all of that kind of piece. So I suppose in the context of the work itself, some of that would be as myself, if you like, as a public speaker. And then some of it is through our National Stigma Reduction Campaign, Sea Change. I've been a facilitator of theirs for the last number of years, and I work through their workplace program. And in that, we would look at conversations around what mental health is, understanding the language around that, and where I fit in that, because I see that there's a big conversation about mental health happening, but it's still kind of out there. So it's about bringing that in to not just the organization, but into me and my team and how I respond and how I lead and what I do and how I can support somebody. And then looking at understanding what stigma is, and that's a really big piece. And I think quite often we understand what stigma is from a dictionary definition, but we may not understand what it feels like or what the impact is, or in the workplace, what the consequences are of that and the impact that is lasting, I suppose. And so it's looking at how we can understand that in a personal perspective, and then in the workplace perspective, what that means, and then how we can move that. And also then looking at culture change. So how we can be more supportive, how we can change the conversations that we're having, and look at really just looking at the language and how do we make it okay to have these conversations. And then in those conversations, where the responsibility is. Because it's wonderful that we're having loads of conversations now around mental health and that a lot of people are coming forward. But it's also important that we are mindful in what we're saying and how we're saying it, because there is the thing that, you know, we do say you don't have to be an expert to help, and that's true. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if somebody is in a very difficult situation and they are in need of medical help, then in that case, you know, obviously there is a particular person that's going to be needing to help them. And that's when we need to have responsibility and know that it's not just, well, I have lived experience, therefore I have the answer. I think that there is no one size fits all. And I think that there is very definitely a collaborative approach needed towards this. So one of the things that I would look towards is working towards lots of different organizations working together. And it's something that I'm very grateful with, the amount of organizations and charities and communities that I have worked with and seen so many different ways of approaching these things. So for me, it's about opening the conversation. It's about looking at language. It's about understanding how to bring it into the me and I context. Mm. It's about looking at what stigma is and how do we actually get our heads around that to see what it means in my own life, and if it happened to me or if I saw it happening, how I could do something about it. Mm. And then from a point of view of supports and signposting, what is actually available and how can I be supportive, and the personal responsibility that feeds through all of that for me, minding myself, and if I'm looking after somebody else, what I would do in that situation or how I can empower them to have more responsibility to improve their lives. It's all of those kind of conversations together, I suppose.
So like, where do you feel we're at with this at the moment? Like, what's the missing piece? Where do you think we are with personal responsibility to begin with when it comes to having conversations around mental health?
Well, I think that's quite a difficult one at the moment, that there's two sides of it. So on one side, I think the personal responsibility, before we start going to the conversation aspect of it and opening up and telling other people, the personal responsibility for me lies in am I doing the things I need to do every single day to mind my health? And I'm using health in the broader sense. So it's my physical health, my spiritual health, and my mental health. All three go together. Am I doing the things I need to do every day to do that? Am I being responsible as a human being in how I respond to other people, and in that, the impact that it's going to have back on me? So, and then when I look at how am I responsible in the conversations I have with other people and what I say and how I manage my mental health in those conversations, that I think is still quite difficult for some people, that it's a matter of not everybody is open to having a conversation, and not everybody is up to speed with the language or how to deal with it. I think there's still a lot of fear around it. On saying that, there are so many more people, and I do think that our understanding of it has changed. Certainly some of the language that I've seen in the last decade, it's a lot cleaner now, if I could say that, you know, like we're not using some of the kind of really negative words that we would have used 10 years ago. And that's a great start. I think there's more understanding around what wellness might look like. And I think this idea of balance has been spoken about a lot, certainly in the last year or two. So I think all of those things are coming into it. I think in the workplace, it's important to have an idea that your boss or your even the workplace itself and the culture that's there is open and supportive. Because there's no point in me saying, well, you should tell your boss and you should be open. And, you know, not all organizations are quite there yet. And that's where we see stigma is really the problem, that some people have been managed out of jobs before, and there is still a certain amount of that happening. I do think we are getting better, but I think it is important, if you are going to open a conversation, that you are clear about what you're going to say and that you know who you're going to talk to and that you have an idea of what their response is going to be. So I think there's a couple of different aspects of that.
So how would somebody go about doing that? How would somebody go about finding the language to engage in these conversations in a healthy and productive way? Like for yourself, how did you start finding the language that started steering you more in the direction that you wanted to go in around these topics?
Well, I think for me, it's been, I've kind of fallen into it over a long period of time. You know, I've had a very long experience in getting to know mental health and in getting to understand it, and certainly working in this area for the last number of years and seeing how other people respond. And, you know, like, for example, there are certain words that I would use in my close circle of friends and family that are okay for me and they're okay for them to use with me, but I don't know that other people would be comfortable. So I wouldn't use those words outside of my circle, for example. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I think that it is a very personal thing, that even for some people saying the words mental health, that's mm-hmm. a hard thing to say, you know. So sometimes it is just about saying, well, how are you feeling? Or, you know, how are you? Or, you know, I think we need to be, again, it's that individual thing. We need to be very clear on what it is we're trying to say and why we're trying to say it. So for me, finding the language was more about, like I say, starting off with that safety piece, that I know what I'm going to say isn't going to change the relationship in a negative way, regardless of who I'm talking to. That I am respectful to myself and to the person I'm speaking to. So that I'm also truthful in what I'm saying. So it's not that I'm saying something to get a reaction or that I am looking for something different. So I think it's very important, if we're going to share something, that we're clear, and also to consider that if I'm going to open this door to have a conversation, the people might have questions. So I need to be aware of, if I go to have these conversations, what am I happy to share or not? What conversation is it that I'm looking to have, so that I have the steer and that I can guide that conversation in a productive manner? Otherwise, what can happen is we can kind of jump in and dig into it, and all of a sudden then we're having this very deep, heavy conversation, or possibly having a row if the other person doesn't respond in the way that we'd like them to. So I think it's really important to have an idea of what we're trying to say, why we're trying to say it, what the reason is that we're trying to say it for, and who we're saying it to, and to factor in a couple of different pieces in that, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. How did you start finding that balance yourself? Was it like, was there a bit of trial and error to this? Like, how did you start getting a feel for normalizing this being clear in what you want out of this as well. What's the message you want to get out there that will help people? Who do you want to help? How do you start finding that over time? What were the key things for you?
I think the very first thing was this understanding that recovery is possible. That was something that I never knew about. So I went through 15 years of severe illness, and it was something that I didn't understand was possible. Mm. And it wasn't something that was talked about, and it wasn't something that was realistic either. You know, even if somebody said, oh, you can get better, it was never really real, if that makes sense. Mm. So I suppose for me, finding this recovery, and even that word recovery, I think a lot of people struggle with that. And they're not sure what that means. And I think in my understanding and the way that I look at it is, if I can manage to live my life, if I can manage to hold proper conversations, if I can manage to look after myself, if I can manage to do the things that I need to do, and if I can manage to feel well, that looks like a pretty healthy life, and it looks like I'm doing okay. So if I can manage to do those things and maintain them and stay in that space, and then even do them when things are getting difficult, that's pretty good going. So for me, it's about understanding again, what does that look like? How do I interact with those things? And so then it started looking at the different people in my life, the different things in my life, all of the different aspects of my life. How were they fitting in with that idea? How do I manage my best self? How do I create this best life? What is it that I need to do? And so that started helping me with the clarity around what it was I wanted, how I wanted it, and what I needed. And so from that point of view, it started helping me with conversations and being able to say to friends and family who are aware of my situation, well, you know, maybe this would be a little bit better, or what do you think of that? Or, and I think to be fair, we had quite a good understanding of the negative words around mental health before, because we had lived through all this mental illness. So I came at it from that point of view, that I had kind of dug my way out of the depths of it, and then found this recovery and positivity and gratitude and like, what's all that stuff? Mm-hmm. So in a way, it's been about finding a balance between both of those. And I suppose my passion has really been to try and help somebody to not go where I've been, and to try and share this message that it doesn't have to be like that. And I think one of the things that I've learned that I found really interesting is that pain is important and it teaches us a lot, but struggle, what is that for? You know, if we consider how life is and the things that we need to do, and then we consider that there's an illness on top of that and all the parts that go with that, and then this bit of struggle, that's totally separate to the illness itself. It's how we perceive it and what we do. So essentially, we have our life, and then we're layering the illness on top of that. But then we're layering this struggle on top of that again. And quite often what happens is, at times of deep illness, we actually kind of move through the illness because we've got the hang of that. We know what we're doing with that. We know how that works. And we get stuck in the struggle. And I think that's the bit, if we can start understanding that. And so for me, the clarity came around helping people see that it's not necessary to have that struggle and to live in it. And to really get people to say, you know, I'm not doing okay. And to be not fearful around that, because it's one of the things that I think, things come from love or from fear. There is no other place. And I think it's when we understand that a lot of people do things out of fear, and they don't consider whether they're going to do it from love or from fear. They just react. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was about learning how to respond rather than react. And so looking at the changes that I started to make, I started changing some of the people in my life. I started looking for more positivity in my life, more positive people, more supportive and more kind of well-being things. So I would be like those practical things that I was saying about how do I look after myself every day. It was about all of that. And the language kind of came with it, because people saw that I was doing something different and would openly ask me, well, why are you doing that? And I'd start off with, well, it makes me feel better. It makes me feel good. You know, mm-hmm. So it was quite a practical way of approaching it. And the language just kind of came with it, I suppose.
So is that how you were changing from reaction to responding? You just changed your environment pretty much. You were, instead of focusing on the stuff you didn't want and the language that was not empowering, you started shifting more towards environments where they're talking about gratitude and immersing yourself in that. Was that how you started shifting from reaction to responding?
Part of it, yeah. And I suppose even from a point of view of, you know, like some of the big issues that we all have in our lives, sometimes when we get so stuck in trying to understand it or trying to make sense of it or trying mm-hmm. to work through it or trying to carry it and all that stuff, all we're doing is focusing on it more, focusing on it all of the time. And I don't think that that's helpful. It doesn't change it. It doesn't move us forward in any way. So it's not that I'm saying completely forget about it and it's useless, but at the same time, giving all our energy to it isn't the answer. So I found that in spending more of my time looking at the things that I could do and mm-hmm. that made me feel better, the more that I did of them, the better I felt. The better I felt, the more I wanted to do them. The more I did them, the more other things I could do. And it just kind of snowballed in the right direction. But it was very definitely a pointed direction. It wasn't that it just happened by fluke. It was a lot of effort and a lot of hard work in the beginning, because shifting from that place of deep despair and very, very negative thoughts and emotions, it's not that it happened overnight, and it's not that it happens instantly either. But at the same time, it is possible. And I think it's like this idea of a dripping tap, that if we can just let it drip and let it continue and continue and continue, eventually the sink will fill. Mm-hmm. And that's where we need to get to, that it's not about moving the goalpost from 0 to 100 and doing it in 30 seconds or in 2 days or 30 days. And this is the thing, I think, for people to understand, that if it's taken somebody months or years even to get unwell, it might take them a similar length of time to get fully better. Mm. And it's about understanding that. And that's where this word, the journey, I think some people struggle with that. Oh, it's a journey that we're on. But really, it is, from a point of view of, it's not an ending place you're going to get to. And also, it's going to take time to get there. So it's not like you can just jump to it. And I think that's really important, that we can all move in that direction. But it's about the little things that we do and the steps that we take to get there. You know, if we can layer them upon each other, that's when we will get there. But it very much is, what I choose to focus on, I will get more of.
Mm. Yeah, simple principle. Yeah, what you choose to focus on expands. Like for me there as well, it was I started moving more in the direction of, yeah, more gratitude, more positivity. And I started realizing when I was moving towards that I wasn't noticing the stuff to be grateful for when I was over here analyzing it to have to ditch. Yeah. That's where the struggle came. And I was like, at the time, it made sense to try and analyze that, figure it out, so somehow I'll get out of it. But it was taking me deeper and deeper into it. So I took the opposite approach and said, what's the opposite to overanalyzing and being critical and positivity? And so for me, like, that word journey has felt a bit odd to begin with, starting off with, but I haven't found a better word to describe my trajectory, because it has been a focus on the process and the journey rather than the outcome. Because when I was in that space where negative thoughts were coming up and it was very easy to focus on them, I knew that thinking that I need to go binary on a 0 to 100 in one go was not going to help me, because I'd give up after a day. I'd be like, fuck, it's too much. It's a completely different person over here. I can't do it. So I took it into that principle. I was like, it might have taken me 8 years to get to this place. So it's going to take me another 8 years to get out of this place. I just said, let's test that out. Yeah. So I can relate to what you're saying there.
Yeah. And the wonderful thing is that even when we're talking about the length of time, if it's taken you 8 years to get unwell, it's not necessarily going to take you 8 years to get unwell. You know, like when I look at it, that word trajectory to me is kind of nearly faster than a journey. And so, yeah. So for me, the journey into recovery was quite quick, actually. And so for me, it's been about maintaining it and building it. And I think that's the thing, that if we choose positivity and if we choose to look in that direction a little bit more, it is amazing how instant it is and how much we get out of it. And if we can continually choose it, the more we're going to get and the better we're going to feel. And so, you know, it does take time. It's not that I'm not saying that, but it doesn't have to take years and years and years. But it is very definitely what you've just said, that if we try and analyze and really get into it, we kind of get into the depths of it, don't we? And then we get down there. And quite often there's no real positive outcome out of that. So even after we've analyzed and we've got down and we've really got into it, we don't feel any better. So what was the point in doing all of that? It hasn't helped to move anything forward. It hasn't helped to shift it in any way. It's just helped us get more stuck in it. And I think that's really, I think that's a different way of approaching it. And I think for some people, it's kind of like, well, this happened to me and it was really big, you know, and it's like the need to be heard, actually, I think, is the biggest part. That if we feel that what happened was really bad and that we've really struggled with it and we're not heard from that, then we need to dig in more. But actually, that's not the case. And it's one of the things that I've found, that the more I let go of my story, I find it really funny at the moment. I have a lot of people asking me to share my story and I'm kind of going, I don't know that it's really relevant anymore. I'm not that person. You know, it's something that happened in my life. It's a story I know really well. And I wouldn't be the person I am now had it not happened. However, it's not really part of my life anymore. And I don't respond in the same ways. I don't have those ways of living. So I find it really interesting that at this moment in time, partly because of the shift that we're having in society, it's become more acceptable to talk about. And because I've been kind of around the block on this one a few times, people know me and they know my story, and that's great. But I do find it interesting in putting it down, the difference that it's making in my life. And I find that really something new.
So I hope you're enjoying today's episode so far. If you're somebody in their 30s, a professional looking for more meaning, purpose and direction in their life, then head on over to Facebook, search for The Happy Mindset. There you'll find a group of people looking to grow, looking to uncover their blind spots and looking to get more out of life. Alternatively, you can head over to thehappymindset.com. There you'll find a way to contact me. We can work one-to-one. I'll help you to move in the direction that is for you. If you're enjoying today's episode, I greatly appreciate it. At the end, if you could leave a review and a rating so that other people can find the podcast and benefit from the information that we're sharing here. So thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode.
From what you say there, that's where I think the magic is that you've been able to put the story down. You're not speaking from that story, so we can see it's a full recovery for you. Mm. And like what helped me was that simple principle. So like there was like a saying by Eric Thomas, he's like a speaker in America, and he was saying that behind every feeling, there might be nothing at the end of your feelings, but behind every principle, there's a promise. Mm. So that helped me to realize that when you're following the negative emotions, that could take a lifetime and there could be nothing at the end of it. But if you follow a principle, you've got a guarantee that what you focus on expands. So for me, that was very simple. It helped me to move in the other direction. But then like when I'm talking about it takes years, it's like I felt better immediately. I felt better and better as I was moving along. It was just, it started compounding in a better direction. Yeah. So like I've just got like a clarity now that I'm in a better headspace now 8 years on the line than I was when I started like a few months into it. But the journey itself was always getting better. So like that's what gives you the perspective, and you can kind of go, I can change my life around from tomorrow because I'm just going to start feeling better and it's going to start compounding in the same way it compounded negatively when I was unconscious to my reactions.
Yeah. Like, and I think that's it. I mean, that difference between reacting and responding is huge. And it's something that quite often, because life is so busy and a lot of us don't have time, we don't give ourselves the time to actually think about a lot of the different things. We just react to them all of the time. And in that reaction space, it does us a disservice because it takes away so many different possibilities. It takes away the chance to respond in a better way that would be more supportive to us and to the situation and get more out of it. Or not respond at all sometimes might even be an option. But because we're reacting, we haven't given ourselves that. And quite often we've reacted and then something flies off and then it's too late and now it's a huge big thing. Whereas had we responded or chosen not to respond, maybe it would have just petered out. So even that small piece, you know, it's, I find it really interesting. And in a way, I mean, if I was to get analytical about it, I probably would, you know, have a chance to get upset to say, well, actually it was really small things that changed my life. Like there was no magic wand. There was no amazing crazy thing that I did. It was all these simple things, you know, it's eating well, it's sleeping well, it's connecting with people, it's exercising. And when I'm saying those things, it's not that I'm saying go on a diet. What I'm saying is nourish your body. You know, when I'm saying exercise, I'm not saying go to the gym for hours. That doesn't suit me. I do a bit of yoga and I do a bit of walking. That's about it. You know, do the things that move your body. Do the things that nourish your body. Sleep deprivation, I think, is huge problem. And I think the fact that we're on screen so much of the time is doing something that we don't even have full knowledge about yet. And so all of those things are impacting on us. If we're nutrition deficient, if we're sleep deprived, we don't have enough water, already those things are impacting massively on our body. And that's before we put any problems or any stress at all into the situation. And so genuinely, by looking at the very, very basic principles of being a human being and what I need to function as a creature, if you like, if I can look after those things and make them awesome, then I have some chance. And so then when I'm coming from that point of view and my body is healthy and my mind is in a better place because of it, then I can respond. And now I have a chance to actually start making things better and to start choosing better for myself, or to start analyzing in a positive way rather than getting stuck in this downward spiral. And because I'm tired, the negativity creeps in and I don't feel like I can fight it off so much. So some of the most basic, simple things I think are really important. And that's where the personal responsibility comes in. That quite often when we go to a place of mental illness, it's such a difficult thing to deal with that we're looking externally for help. I want somebody to fix me. I want somebody to do something to me. That's never going to work. And the other thing is that we've already discovered that everybody is unique. So their experience of the illness is different. What they need is different. But from a point of view of going to a specialist, there is no one fix. So there isn't a magic tablet or a magic bullet or all these things. It's a culmination of all these different supportive things that if somebody wants to live well, they need to eat, they need to sleep, they need to drink water, they need to have connectivity. If they need a medical intervention or they need support in that kind of nature, then there's that as well. But it's not that any one of them will fix it. And I think that's the bit that we need to get to, that people need to start taking responsibility and saying, yes, I'm really tired. And yes, I could just throw pizza in the oven because that's easy. But I probably aren't going to feel much better because it's not going to give me energy. It's not going to nourish my body. It's probably not the best thing for me. So if I'd like to have more energy tomorrow, what can I do right now to solve that? How can I be my best self? Or, you know, I'm watching a program and I know that I could totally binge this and watch another two because I don't have to go to work tomorrow. But then I'm going to be up until 2 o'clock in the morning, and that's going to make me get up a little bit later. And I'm probably going to be groggy because I've been looking at a screen so long. So the better choice would be for me to go, actually, I'll just watch this one, or maybe I'll watch a second one and that's it. I'm going to stop and I'm going to give myself the sleep. So sometimes the personal responsibility is in tiny measures and tiny steps and saying, actually, I can do this. And I do have the power to make some change, instead of always making it an out there thing and a really big deal of I can't do anything and I'm powerless to change my situation, because that is a desperately hopeless place to be in. So to look at the really teeny tiny things of what would make me feel good right now. And if we can apply that to every single thing we do. So for example, if we're out and we need to eat something and we go somewhere and the food is awful and we know it's going to be really bad, our choice is to eat it anyway, or to go somewhere else and find something different that would be better. You know, and it is about sometimes a situation as well, actually, I really don't have time and it's better to eat something bad than not eat at all. Or no, actually, I have 5 minutes. I'm going to go next door and I'm going to get something different. I think that would suit me better. Again, it's going back to this time and it's going back to questioning ourselves and saying, well, what is this? And how do I have that conversation? Because actually, those are the conversations that we need to be having with each other, because that's what's going to change our mental health. And that's the conversations that we can have about, you know, well, I noticed that you bring salads into work all the time. And why do you do that? Like, do you not get hungry? And then the answer would be, well, actually, no, I have loads of protein in those. And I make an effort with my nutrition and I bring it to work so that I don't have to eat something that makes me feel bad. And then I have more energy. So those are conversations that we can have with other people that is actually about our mental health, but we're not using those words in that conversation. It's about, well, how does that make you feel? And what do you think about that? And I think if we can approach all of it in that way, about the teeny tiny things that we do in a daily way, it means then when something big happens that we have an easier way to get to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's key, actually. It's I find that the mind can be quite intangible and it can get quite complex when you're using your analytical mind, that the best way to go about it is to look at your body and go, what can I improve about my physical health because that impacts my mental health.
Yeah.
And then just snowballs, you build momentum in that direction, start looking at your habits. Like even when you're talking there about the Netflix thing, I found that when you make a decision that you got more like integrity with yourself. It's like you made a decision there, so you'll do it again some other time. But if you slip on that decision, it will lead you to slipping in another decision, lowering your standards. Your standards decrease every time you make the small indecisions.
Yeah.
But the opposite of that is just make one powerful decision. And powerful by I mean a really small decision like that. It seems very small, but to yourself, you're sending a message to say, I can say no to myself sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I can move myself in a new direction bit by bit. So,
no, you're absolutely right. And I think what you said there about the body, it is the most incredible machine that we could ever possibly be gifted with. And it tells us all the time. It tells us everything. It tells us when we're tired. It tells us when we're hungry. It tells us when we're stressed. And this is the thing that actually we've got so good at ignoring it. That's part of where the problems are coming from. So if we consider what stress physically does to our body and the reason that it's doing it, it's the perception of something dangerous is happening and the stress is there for this flight or fight incidence. But quite often that thing that's happening in our body isn't actually relevant for the thing it's happening for. So it's not relevant in a situation in work where I've just got an email. I don't need that response, but my body doesn't know that. And the same way then, if I'm having an argument with somebody, it's not going to escalate to this person trying to kill me or me trying to kill them. And yet my body is going to respond in that way. And the problem is that we live in such a stress response way at this moment in time that our bodies are learning to live in a highly elevated level of stress. And so we get switched off from knowing, well, what is this? And so we're seeing people with neck problems and back problems and all sorts of muscular pain because of tension. And I think that's a really interesting way to check in and say, well, actually, how does my body feel at the moment? Am I tired? Are my muscles sore? Have I a pain in my stomach? Have I got a headache? You know, all those kind of things are signs to tell us, well, actually, maybe the headache is because you haven't drunk enough today, or maybe you need a little bit of fresh air. They're really, really simple things. And sometimes I feel a bit stupid when I'm telling people how to change their lives. I'm like, take a 5-minute break, get some fresh air, drink some water. And they're looking at me going, are you for real? But, you know, if we regularly did these things, I know they sound tiny, but if they were layered and layered and layered and layered, we would suddenly find that we have an incredible life. And it's about taking those moments, because the thing is, today is going to come and go anyway. And tomorrow isn't promised. So we need to find ways of finding that every moment that we're in, whatever we're doing, and that we're doing our best to be in it and to choose it. And I think that's the other bit that changed in my life, that I realized I felt like I didn't have a choice in a lot of things. And so that would stress me out, or I would get upset about it, or I would get angry about it. And so a friend said to me, you know, well, what if you clear your schedule, and what if you don't do any of the stuff that you're supposed to do? I was like, well, I can't do that. And she's like, is the world going to stop? I was like, no. And she said, well, what's going to happen? And I said, well, I won't get paid or this, you know, and I went through the scenarios and she went, yeah, okay. So there are some consequences, but in reality, it's not the end of the world. So what if you were to just undo everything and just do what you want instead? And so then I went back and I started looking at the things that I had scheduled in, and I started looking at things that I had to do. And these were like, you have to do them or there's going to be a problem. And then I started looking at it and going, well, what if instead of me saying to myself, I have to do this, I'm choosing to do this. I would like to do this. It would help me if I do this. I'd be pleased to do this because I know I'm going to get paid for it. And I know if I get paid, I can then afford food or whatever it was. I started jumping immediately to the benefit and then choosing the benefit. So then all of a sudden, I wasn't feeling so stressed about the things that I had to do. And it made me feel like I had some level of choice back in my life. And again, it seems like a really small thing, but it was a really big shift for me to get over some of the things that I was finding the most difficult. And I think that's a really interesting thing, that if you can find a way to be a little bit more positive in your thinking. It's not that the whole world is going to change and everything is going to magically disappear, but it definitely does have an impact on what your mood is. And then you might actually get motivated to do something because now you're not stressing about it.
That makes sense. Yeah. It's whatever you focus on expands. It comes back to that again. Yeah. It starts with small little shifts in focus.
It does.
This is the type of stuff. It's very practical, very normal, very. But I think what's missing is people overlook the fact that these are principles we're talking about that expand over time. Like, if you've got that in your awareness, you'll do this because you realize that will shift me to this direction. Yeah. And it'll become easy. The unconscious mind will be automatic to it. My reactions become more automatically positive than negative. Because in my understanding, it doesn't matter if something's negative or positive, the universe is more neutral. It doesn't really care. So you might as well start shifting towards the positive. It just makes sense for me and the people around me, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So where do you feel we're at now in Ireland when it comes to having these conversations and normalizing them? Because from what I'm talking from our conversation today, I think the direction we need to steer in is to see past the stories that are entangling us in a struggle and coming back to normalizing stuff and going, checking in with our bodies to begin with, say, like, why am I always so stressed out and anxious all the time? Or just listen. Because I found as well that when I feel stressed out and anxious and angry now, I check in with my body and I go, why do I feel this way? I don't look for an analytical response, but I just check in and go, why am I feeling this way? And then over time, I'll start realizing, okay, my focus is this direction and that direction. That's the way I've been navigating it. So where do you think we're at in Ireland, and how far away are we now as a society from getting to just normal conversations around this?
Well, as I said earlier, I think I've definitely seen change. I've seen that the language that we're using is less negative. It's less stereotypical. It's less stigmatizing. So I think we are being a lot more responsible in the language that we're using and how we're using it. I think people are more compassionate now. I think people are starting to understand to a degree that mental health is with us all the time. I think there is a certain thing where there's a certain amount of people who are totally on board with that and they totally get it. Then there's an amount of people who they get the concept, but they're not really sure. And then there's a group of people who don't really get it yet. You know, they're still in that, they're still in the stigmatizing place. And it's not specifically that I think they mean to be. So I think that there is still work to be done. And I still think we have a long way to go until we can have an open society where people can just be how they are and be exactly how they feel without it impacting in a negative way. In the same way, like I said, it's not about airing all our dirty laundry. It's not about giving all the information, but just even being able to say, I'm not having a great day, and not needing to get into it any more than that, but having to carry that all of the time and not be able to let that be part of your day is very, very tough. So I see that society has changed. I mean, the fact that so many organizations around the country now are utilizing different wellness firms. A lot of organizations now have the like of gyms and yoga rooms and quiet rooms. They have EAP programs, so that's employee assistance programs, and that's looking at counseling services, whether it's on the phone or in person, and it can be for a range of different issues, be they mental health or financial or, you know, lots of different things. And I think that's the interesting thing to me, that those things are happening. And some of it is relatively new. There are also lots of events where organizations are bringing speakers in, or they're bringing their staff to, that are talking about mental health. So, for example, there was the Mental Health Summit, and there was the Good Summit, and there was Let's Talk Mental Health last year and this year. All of those events are designed to start these conversations and to start talking about health in general, but also some of them more specifically about mental health and how do we get around this and how do we make this more public and more okay. Also, we see an awful lot in the media where a lot more people are having these conversations and it is a lot more open. So I see that society has moved quite a lot and that it is a lot more open, but I also see that we have a way to go yet. I don't think we're there in any means. And it's not that, you know, in all my positivity and in all my looking to the bright side, I'm not naive in any way. And this is why I do the work that I do, because there are some organizations who are still stuck in that place of, if we talk about mental health and mental illness, then we're going to bring it here and we're going to create a problem. So there is still some of that mentality. But in general, I think we are getting better as a society and we are moving forward very, very definitely. And we are looking more positively. I also think from a point of view of other countries, I think we're quite far ahead actually in that respect, that we are quite far in the conversations that we're having. And it's not just, you know, regular conversations that we're having in work. These conversations are happening at government level as well, which for me is really important. And there are lots of things happening and changing behind the scenes that we don't see. And for me, that's the big bit, that it isn't just a group of people having a chat and trying to change something. You know, this is happening in a really big way. And then to see on the like a LinkedIn, people across the world are having the same conversations. That's, you know, that's, there's something really big in this, and there's something important. And I think that's why this conversation is going to sustain and maintain, and it is going to continue until we find what the right answers are.
Mm-hmm.
If that kind of, if there were right answers to be had, you know?
Yeah. Shift in understanding. I think that's where we're heading towards. So what does a happy life look like to you?
Well, like I was saying earlier, it's getting enough sleep. It's spending time with family and friends. I'm an artist and a crafter, so getting time to do a bit of that. Getting time to do gardening, getting time to just sit and do nothing sometimes, or get out and go for a walk, or, you know, just the small stuff. And again, it's that it isn't any one particular thing, and it isn't any one particular way of being. But I suppose for me, a happy life is certainly lack of illness, but more so lack of struggle, because I understand that illness will come and go now. So for me, my happiness is knowing that if illness comes, that I don't have to struggle through it and that I can manage it. So the happy medium is that if I can live as well as I can on every day that I get because of my own actions, I think that's pretty good going.
Mm. So is there any book that has impacted you? Any book that stands out for you?
Well, there's one that I keep going back to, and it's funny, when you sent me the list of questions that you might ask, I considered, because there's so many incredible books. Actually, I think there's two. Okay, so the first one is Alice in Wonderland, because I have a thing about Alice, and I think the idea of allowing our imagination be part of our lives is really important. And you commented about my house earlier on. Mm-hmm. So I have lots of Alice in Wonderland stuff in my house, and it's to remind me about that imagination and about that playful self that we have. So for me, there's that, and that's really important. And the other book that I've come back to a number of times is The Artist's Way. And it's more like a workbook, I suppose. And so for me, the idea is to challenge myself. And the reason that I keep coming back to it is because I've changed so much over time. And I think it's interesting to revisit the same concepts, I suppose, and the same principles, and see where I am with those. And whether it's that I'm coming at it from an artistic point of view or just from a human getting through life point of view, it's not that you have to be really creative and painting or sculpting or any of that kind of stuff to use this book. I find it really helpful in questioning myself as to where I am and what's really important to me and what am I doing with it. So I'd come back to that book quite a good bit over the last number of years.
Sounds good. So where would people find you, Barbara, if you wanted to work with you or have you talk to them?
Well, my LinkedIn profile, so Barbara Louise Brennan on LinkedIn, and I'm currently setting up a website, barbaralouisebrennan.ie. That'll be ready in the new year as well, but certainly LinkedIn, they can find me there.
Perfect. Cool. So thanks for talking today, Barbara, and shedding some light on where we're at in Ireland right now with mental health and how to normalize these conversations as well. So thanks a lot for taking your time today.
It's been lovely to chat to you. Thanks a million.
Thanks. Until next time, have fun and enjoy the process.